If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Captain Jean-Luc Picard, the U.S.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase. Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, Deep Space Nine, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How you doing, Adam?
I was up early for a shoot, Ben. One of the rare shoots that I've decided to do lately.
The collapse of my filmmaking career. I have a convenient excuse of I moved to a different town and I have fewer contacts. What's your excuse?
That's a great question. Today's shoot was a drone shoot, and this was like a couple of years ago.
So were you taking out a wedding or a hospital?
Yeah, I was just running it into things and people. I would be doing that if I were a hobbyist, Ben.
Yeah. You have a real hate-on for Médecins Sans Frontières, and you're always taking out field hospitals.
Any fucking chance you get to speak French, you'll just fucking take it, won't you? God, it's so irritating. I thought before we had a podcast that this was going to be the career track for me.
Yeah.
I grew up flying model airplanes. I got a drone helicopter, and I was like, this is a license to print money. This is going to be great.
And you got the FAA license to fly it for remunerative reasons, right?
I did the whole thing. I'm on the up and up. But guess what, Ben? You know who isn't interested in the up and up? any actual video producer.
Yeah.
Like, as soon as you get into a pre-production meeting with them, they're like, oh, so there's like a permit process and like FAA permission and like different kinds of airspace. And you're like, yeah, there are. All of those factors are a part of it. And they're like, great, well, we'll call you. And then you don't get the call because they had their nephew fly instead.
Right.
Like completely off the books and off the records.
I had a client want me to do some drone stuff. And I said, oh, I don't have the license, so I'm not really willing to risk doing it and facing some kind of criminal penalty. And they're like, okay, well, we'll get a college kid to come do it. And I said, I don't feel comfortable with that either. Like, I don't want to be there, like,
right,
like nominally the director of the project with some kind of control over the thing. And you're just like having some young person put their future at risk. And they're like, it'll be fine. And then it wound up being an indoor project, and they were using the drone indoors. And I was like, well, if I'd known it was inside, I would have had a totally different... Why didn't you tell me that?
It is... So many parts of this form of production are frustrating, but today's shoot went great. It was a real estate video, so I shot a couple of properties with it. Easy peasy. It was
cool.
Great. With the added benefit of this being an old college buddy of mine who was directing and producing the shoot. And this is a guy I haven't seen in quite a while. And during our scout last week, we got to talking about what the both of us had been up to. And you know how that conversation goes now, Ben, because this friend of mine who hasn't really been updated on my life lately was like, so are you still doing corporate video for big aerospace company? And I was like, yeah, I'm doing some of that still, but like what I'm really doing is podcast. And he was blown away by this. But like, if we had still been doing this the show in anonymity, he would have been blown away by it. But when I started to tell him just how this thing took off and the, about the Friends of DeSoto and about doing live show tours, it just blew his mind. And every time I retell that story to someone I haven't been close to in a while, that's the effect.
Yeah, it's weird. I was at a dinner party with my wife recently, and I was one of two people at this dinner party who was not an attorney. Which is like...
Does that make you a goyim?
That is a very offensive stereotype.
Did you, if you'll notice, I paused like a half a second extra before I said it to give you a place to edit.
Well, after they had me turn the lights on because it was Saturday, it's a fun hang for me because I'm a little bit of an anomaly, but the explain what you do for a living used to be very easy, and I could like, because you don't want to kind of make the party about yourself. You don't want to drop a conversational bomb that will have 25 follow-up questions.
Right.
Which I sort of make a living talking about Star Trek on the internet does.
I prefer to be the listener in most social situations.
Yeah. Or, like, I'm happy talking to somebody about it one-on-one, but when I have the attention of 10 people at a dinner party and the other people all have, like, real jobs doing important things, and I'm like,
you know what's been happening to me?
I'm in a different tax bracket, and I'm kind of a dipshit.
Has this been happening to you where you'll be in a mixed social situation like that and no one is there to do bits with you?
Yeah, it's tough. It's really tough.
This relationship and this show has rewired my brain in that way. Like, you can't do bits all the time with everyone. Sometimes people don't want to participate in that kind of silliness.
Yeah, and sometimes people don't know what jokes are or particularly care for them.
It really helps you figure out who in the room you don't really want to spend time with.
Yeah.
That's self-selecting.
It's funny, like, if I ever need to revisit why did we use the subtitle a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast, like, all I need to do is be in a semi-grown-up social situation where that comes up, or, like, have to fill out a form where that comes up.
Yep. We'll never forget. That the subtitle to our show is our 9/11.
Yeah, it's true, Adam. Well, speaking of drones, do you want to drone on about Star Trek?
Yeah, I could be into that. Let's get started as we enter into Season 2, Episode 22, The Wire.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
Where we learn that the repetitive epic is the most celebrated literary genre in Cardassian literature, Ben.
Yeah.
I love that that has a name. And it's a thing.
It's totally... It's great. Like, you know, I like to make an effort to be well-read. I like to read a book. I'm always reading a book. Sometimes dipping into the classics is like a temptation, you know? Like, oh, I should, you know...
You're just fucking literacy signaling, aren't you?
Yeah, fuck you, Adam. I'm trying to make a point here. You know, like, you try and read something that, like, is supposed to be, like, one of the greats, you know? Like, I think I tried to read Moby Dick at some point, or maybe it was something else, but, like, one of those type of books that just everybody...
One of the greats.
everybody has at their fingertips as a reference and knows like the rough plot of, but very few people have actually read. And it was fucking unreadable, you know, like a lot of those, you know, quote unquote great books. Like, I had a conversation with my dad recently about Ulysses and just like, that's like the best novel, according to people who take that stuff really seriously.
According to dads?
Well, like, he and I agreed. Like, what? How is it the best novel if it's unreadable? Like, what the fuck are we supposed to get out of it?
You have to have a certain kind of sweater vest to enjoy that book.
Yeah. It's like the best novel for people who want to feel important for agreeing that it's the best novel.
My only relationship to Moby Dick is the Twitter account that just tweets single sentence passages from it.
Mm.
And
that sounds like a lot less upsetting than most of the Twitter accounts I follow, which just retweet things that are horrible about politics.
Well, I think one of the shrewd moves by the person who runs that Moby Dick account is that they tailor the lines for the moment. And so...
Wow.
There's a lot about that account when you read the sentence of the day when it drops that is appropriate for the time.
Fun.
But even with that, no interest in reading the book.
So Bashir and Garrick are hanging out. It's like it's morning time and Garrick is pissed off because there's like a freighter that was supposed to have dropped off some sweaters, but the aliens that operate this freighter do not have a concept of time.
Though I must say they make magnificent sweaters.
The USS Joanne Fabrics didn't make it to their port of call.
Yeah, they just got lost in their quilting bee. They got a little distracted.
The USS Hobby Lobby. Very problematic ship.
Yeah, like I've taken all of my business across the street to the USS Michaels ever right. since I found out what the USS Hobby Lobby is up to. So Bashir is complaining about this book that Garrick gave him that sucked, and
it's hard to take. Like, I get Garrick's perspective when you recommend a thing of media to someone, you take it personally if they don't like it.
Yeah, like it is a source of genuine friction in my relationship that my wife does not care for Rick and Morty.
Well, there are a lot of reasons not to like Rick and Morty, most specifically the people who like Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
But I personally like Rick and Morty, so I have a complicated relationship to that.
Yeah, she doesn't know anything about the toxic fan culture of Rick and Morty.
The people who just yell out catchphrases in public at top volume.
Yeah. Where were we that somebody was doing wubba lubba dub dub, and we were like, man, like the joke about that is that it's an asshole thing to do. Not that you should be going around doing it. It's like the people who started Fight Clubs after they saw the movie Fight Club, you know?
Yeah.
Totally missed the point. Yeah, so they're like, I think they're trying to find their lunch date vibe, and, you know, they go through the list of restaurants. Quark's is out of the question, as is Klingon Buffet.
Is Quark's out of the question because they don't serve food before noon or something? Did you get a clear read on why they weren't going to go there?
I got the sense that it was more that Garrick wanted a chiller vibe than that.
Right, because of the splitting headaches he appears to be taking on.
Yeah, this is one of those scenes where you kind of think it's going one way, and then just they randomly drop in Garrick getting distracted from the conversation by his splitting headache. And
I was just trying my... Are you all right?
I'm fine.
You know, the doctor is... given to concern over these kinds of things, and Garrick is given to evasiveness and self-autonomy, you know?
Yeah.
This is a conflict between them that has been a long time coming, I think.
Kira shows up in a sort of like script formatting appearance.
Yeah. Like, she like walks out of the crowd and is just like, I'm a character on this show. Okay, bye.
It's like her specific use here is to take us to opening credits. She's like, what is that about? And Bashir's like, I don't know. And then slam to credits.
Yeah, they just both turn to camera.
Yeah. Both she and Sisko basically have one line in this episode. And that's it.
They got more than Dax, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I guess Dax is in it, right?
Dax is in the next scene when...
She's got the plant that appears to be what I always pictured as the Mournhammer.
Right. Oh, boy. Yeah, not a lot of grooming being done around the base of the Mournhammer, it appears.
Yeah, Dax, you got to manscape your plant.
I mean, the one thing we need in this scene is a way to discuss the type of care Bashir is used to giving, both people and fauna.
Right.
Because they use this plant as a jumping off point.
Now, Dax, because this plant is uncircumcised, you need to take special care to clean under the foreskin whenever you're watering it. That'll prevent the buildup of smegma and unpleasant odors.
Dax is chatting him up about the plant, but also about like the difference between a work friend and a friend friend, I feel like.
Yeah.
Because Bashir may have things twisted, according to Dax.
Well, I mean, I think he's in a confusing place because he did sort of get ordered to be to accept Garrick's overtures of friendship by Sisko.
Yeah.
But now he is sort of in that place of, I kind of do think of him genuinely as a friend.
Yeah, and like if you see a guy feeling pain right in front of you and he's your breakfast buddy and has been for a year, like this is a weekly lunch date they've had.
Like, yeah.
I think it's easy to see how things could become more than only professional, especially when the guy's obviously suffering.
Right. This is... I think the first episode where Garrick has a couple of clear motivations and a couple of genuine moments. Like, you're all like, one of the fun things about this character is that you question everything he says, and there's plenty of that in this episode. But, and I think initially that splitting headache, you wonder, is that a real splitting headache or is this some, is he off on one of his games already?
Yeah, you ever get a splitting headache to get out of an awkward conversation?
Yeah, not tonight, honey. I mean, I've had people do it to me, is what I'm saying. But yeah, that's a thing that seems to be within this character's capabilities, right? The headache that isn't real for reasons.
Right.
And that's not the case here. He's genuinely in pain. And, you know, they talk about like, do you trust Garrick? Does he trust you? And that's also a fun question. Like, does the relationship they've formed contain any trust? And can it when Garrick is so evasive all the time? When trust is, like, never really on the table from his side?
Because Bashir is a non-professional spy, and it appears that Garrick is, like, I don't get the sense that there's any spycraft happening here. That I think Sisko's game has got to be eventually, maybe many years down the road, Garrick will say something by mistake or get too casual with Bashir in a way that will betray his true identity.
Yeah. I mean, Bashir is presented as being so guileless.
Yeah.
So much of the time that, like, It's amazing to think that Sisko would think that he would notice when something was important enough to report up the line.
Yeah. You
know? What are you doing? What are you doing now?
Ow! 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 Be guard.
Not be guard.
Exactly.
little later on, Bashir sees Garrick talking to Quark, and this is after hours. This is after the promenade is closed. And there's like, what I'm gathering is like a window at Quark's where, like, toward the end of the night as they're putting the stools up on the bar, maybe you can go up to the window and get like one last drink for the road.
Yeah, there used to be a bar in my neighborhood in Brooklyn that would, they served all kinds of beverages, both alcoholic and non, in styrofoam cups so that you could like walk out plausibly with a, you know, a margarita, like a 16-ounce margarita in a styrofoam cup.
Oh, that's nice.
That didn't read as being booze.
Sure.
So
it just read as asshole with a styrofoam cup.
Well, those are recyclable now, Adam, so they're not any more of an asshole move than any other single-use plastic item.
Fair enough.
Which I guess are generally kind of an asshole move, but like, hey man, it's the world we live in. These are things that are going to have to be decided at a market level, not at the individual consumer level.
No one cares about anything anymore, Ben.
It's a real shit show.
Bashir sees Garrick kind of storm off after appearing to not get what he wants of Quark.
He overhears the end. It's like, a Quark, you need to get this quickly. Like, you need to Amazon Prime this shit to me. And it's got the tones of a drugs deal, I would say.
Sure.
There's a lot about this episode called The Wire that makes me think that Garrick is sort of the Bubbles of Deep Space Nine. And the overhearing a drugs conversation but misunderstanding its meaning is maybe one of the best parts of that.
Yeah, that's fair. That's right on.
You're walking down them alleys of the projects, man. You're stepping on the dead soldiers.
Bashir, like, kind of saunters into the bar after having stood upstairs listening to this, and, like, I couldn't help but something's, Quark. It's another one of those things where Quark knows that everybody knows what he's up to, but still proceeds apace, you know?
Quark still walking the promenade unpunished for attempting to run guns in the last episode.
Right.
Teflon Quark.
Yeah. The next scene is Sisko's little cameo in the episode.
Yeah, gotta get him paid.
He pulled his jaw yelling at admirals, which pretty on character.
That sounds like a made-up story for why he may have jaw pain, Ben.
Oh yeah, you think he was deep throating something?
I don't know. Nechayev was just on the station not too long ago.
Yeah,
maybe there's a thing.
Hmm.
I'd like to see that. I mean, I wouldn't like to see it, but I'd like to see that relationship unfold. That'd be nice.
That's a lot of levels of command to be fraternizing between.
Yeah, no kidding. Up the long ladder, indeed.
But, you know, you drop the right canapé off on Nechayev, she's down for anything.
Yeah. One line of dialogue out of Avery Brooks. When you get an Avery Brooks on set, I guess that's all you need.
Yeah. He really looms large over this episode. O'Brien is there to help Bashir, like, dig into the computer to get some like Cardassian biology stuff, which is really just like a plot device for Bashir won't know how to help Garrick later in the episode. Like, that is kind of O'Brien's function in this.
Yeah, it really is.
And that scene is like, it's cut short because Quark is trying to call a cab for Garrick because he's been overserved at the bar. And
Garrick's drinking the blue drink of headache relief.
God.
Did I step on you?
That's not what I wrote down. I had that he was drinking the blue drink of not really dealing with your problems.
Oh. I sort of saw it as an Aleve type beverage. Mm.
Yeah. You take one and it lasts 12 hours and he's taken three.
An naproxen sodium suspension.
Yeah. Well, he's doing a lot of the classic overserved guy at the bar moves where, you know, he resists the accusation that he's been overserved and kind of falls for a lot of bullshit where people are like, okay, you and me, why don't we go drink together somewhere else? Yeah, that sounds fucking great, man. A lot of like not noticing the bottle getting passed from behind Bashir's back to Quark.
That was a fun bit of business.
I thought Armin Shimmerman's performance in this scene was really delightful. He's really sells how put upon he feels.
I like the wiggle that Bashir gives the bottle too. Like it's not just behind the back. It's like a wigga wigga, and then and it gets his attention in a fun way. Garrick is an energy drunk, which is definitely a type of drunk that that is not on the spectrum of fun drunks, I don't think, because he's the type that needs to be fenced in a little bit, needs to be controlled, so that he does not become destructive. And this is what Bashir attempts to do.
His drunk has become everybody else's problem to deal with.
Yeah, and so
even
Bashir,
though it's not like abusive drunk or sad drunk, it's still sucky drunk.
And you can't diffuse an energy drunk. You can only hope to like herd them. And that's what Bashir attempts to do here.
Right. And before he can do it, Garrick collapses on the floor, and they have to do the Deep Space Nine equivalent of an ambulance, which is a site-to-site transport to the infirmary.
Right. Pretty clean floor of Quark's bar, I gotta say.
Yeah, Quark's running a tight ship, you know? You don't bring in customers with a dirty floor. You can't run a fancy hotel casino type establishment and have, you know, peanut shells all over the floor or whatever.
I mean, I wouldn't want to fall on the floor of my local, and it's not to say that my local is a dive or anything, but I think Quark's keeping it pretty clean.
Yeah. I noticed that a lot of like older bars opted for carpeting on the floor.
Oh, I do not like that choice.
Yeah, that seems like a bad call.
If what they're trying to do is knock down the echo, they should be carpeting the ceiling.
Right. That's where all your acoustics are going anyways.
Yeah. Now, if you're trying to remodel your local bar, the very worst thing you can do is carpet your flooring.
We've gone with a floor treatment of an engineered lumber that is very watertight and easy to maintain.
When you buy this new laminate flooring, what you get is a laminate section on top of plywood. The boards click into place, making installation a snap.
Remember to acclimatize your engineered lumber in the space for a few days before you install it so that it doesn't warp later on. In this context, warp does not mean travel at a speed faster than light, but rather change shape subtly to create bowing and bending. I feel like they would have to pepper information like that in this old Enterprise, you know?
Yeah, totally. Have you been watching the new season of This Old from Charleston?
I have. It's
a delight.
Kind of uncomfortable, the like, hey, yeah, this is the part of the house that the slaves used to live in.
Yeah, that's
tough.
Like,
I don't think that they're not, like, addressing that and, like, confronting how uncomfortable it is, but, like, I have never... I guess I suppose it's just like a place of origin privilege of mine that I've never thought that any house I've lived in might have had slaves in it at some point. But I guess you just run into that in certain parts of the country.
It's a situation where you're getting like a little bit of history with that accent. And it is incredible. Like now when you're remodeling houses south of the Mason-Dixon line... Occasionally you'll get the quarters for the masters and then the side quarters for the slaves. This can make for a very problematic episode of your public television show.
Yeah. Like, I think that they are aware of the discomfort that they're heading into and have like done a lot to like talk about it. But also I maybe would, if I was the producer of a public television show about rebuilding old houses, might just like go like, hey, like, this isn't necessarily our lane, and let's just stay out of it.
I gotta say, like, as difficult as those things are to talk about. Nothing is as deeply upsetting racially as Richard going to the Motown Museum.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, nothing
beats
that.
They realize that everything is uphill from that. Hey, listen, if you have any concerns about this episode and how we're turning the slave quarters into the older daughter's bedroom, allow us to direct your attention to the time we sent the plumber from our show to the Motown Museum.
Oof. I'm still getting chills thinking about that.
I have never laughed that loud at any television thing ever. Like, nothing has ever been funnier to me than that.
My wife
and was intentionally or not.
My wife and I went to the Stax Museum while we were in Memphis, and it's all I could think about as a visitor to that place. Like, do not pull a Richard. Keep it cool.
Do not attempt to do a two-step under any circumstances.
Yeah.
The next scene is Garrick is like totally incapacitated in the infirmary, knocked out on the slab, and Bashir is actually consulting with Odo.
Mr. Bunkin?
Because he's discovered a device inside Garrick's brain that is wired into all different parts of his brain. And it's like there's like scar tissue around it and stuff. But he's got Odo there because he wants to see what this drugs deal situation with Quark might have been about. And Odo's like, oh, yeah, I can help you with that. I monitor every transmission that Quark sends off the station.
Like,
it is revealed that Odo lives deep inside Quark's ass in this episode.
It's a massive reveal that only goes a little bit like Bashir is surprised, but right. He is not go to Cisco surprised.
Yeah, like start riots in the streets surprised. Which he should be.
I get the sense that because Quark is not Starfleet and Odo is not Starfleet, that it's sort of a gray area, right? Like, Odo is operating according to his own set of rules as written by the joint team of Bajor and Starfleet, right?
Yeah, he has Sisko's trust, you know?
Yeah.
But he has such a weird job. He was like the head of security when the Cardassians left and just got to keep the gig.
What's the difference, though, between Odo putting up a camera and Odo turning himself into a glass to be in a room where shit's going down? I would argue there isn't much difference between the two.
Yeah, that's a good point. I guess the difference is that you can put cameras up all over the place, and that kind of gives you a...
And Odo only has the number of eyes that he can put on his weird goo body.
Yeah. How much of Odo do you need for it to be Odo? Could he, like, separate it into two different parts? And then is it both Odo, or is one of them, whichever one is bigger, Odo?
Yeah, if one half is 51% and the other is 49, is the 51% the more sentient?
Does he always have to be totally contiguous? Because, like, the T-1000 can get, like, some blobs dropped off of him, and then they reabsorb into his police shoe, that weird black shoe that police wear.
Could he turn himself into a fine mist?
Yeah, that'd be nice.
He'd probably
Why does he
be
ever
a,
do that?
He'd probably be a great plumber, right? Flush him down a toilet? He'd know exactly what's blocking your pipes.
So they do some surveillance, right? They watch Quark on FaceTime with this Cardassian, and Quark is like putting in a requisition and I guess putting in the product number on a website. Like this gull is like putting it in, and his computer turns into, like, you know, you see the like flashing light on his face.
I love Bohica here. Quark like gives him the UPC code and Bohica enters it, and it's like, if you only have a UPC code on Amazon and it like brings up a sex toy, you will get nothing but like sex toy ads for the rest of your life.
I like how quickly he goes through, like, okay, my life is over and my career is ruined, so Let me just make sure you don't tell me any further information, and hopefully that will minimize how much trouble I'm in, because I'm already in a lot.
This poor guy.
Yeah.
I can't remember another Cardassian that I felt sorry for. I do feel sorry for Bohica.
Yeah, he has kind of like Cranston and Malcolm in the Middle vibes a little bit.
Honey, the important thing is no cops were there to see it.
He's kind of jovial and boisterous, and then like in big trouble, like in much bigger trouble than he knows how to deal with before he realizes it.
His fear really helps that, right? If he was bravely resisting the trouble he was in, he would be just like any other Cardassian. But he's totally freaking out in a fun way.
What did you think of that close-up on Quark in this scene? There's a really tight close-up where it's like Quark is like almost looking at the lens.
Because they do a shot, reverse shot, FaceTime, right?
Mm-hmm.
I liked it. I mean, I didn't think it was a bad shot to the degree that I barely even noticed it as being a unique thing.
Man, I thought it was really remarkable. Like I guess I just haven't seen them get that close on a face when it's shot, reverse shot, FaceTime on this show.
They both do a fair amount of leaning in and leaning back off of the camera in this scene in a fun way to emphasize points.
Yeah, like there's so much body language in that. My therapist occasionally, like if there's a scheduling issue and I have to reschedule an appointment, will sometimes do FaceTime therapy appointment with me.
Whoa.
And it's always like, I'm very like self-conscious of like where I am in the frame on the FaceTime, and like and I like clean up the like office, the portion of my office that will be visible through the camera on my computer when I do it.
Including the year one tour poster that we had.
Dude, I totally moved the year one tour poster away and put a different piece of art on the wall today.
Good job by you.
I had a therapy appointment. I didn't want her to ask, like, who is that strange looking man in the diaper in that picture behind you?
Do you think your co-host Pendulous Sack is an existential threat to your good mental health?
I've seen cod pieces, but this is ridiculous.
Do you feel like FaceTime therapy is less good than in-person therapy in any way?
I think it is. I wouldn't want it to be the routine, but it works in a pinch. I wouldn't want it to be the routine because I think that there is a part of this that is about like the act of like leaving the house and going and doing something on behalf of my own well-being that is impactful, you know?
Yeah.
Like, the same thing of like getting out and going to yoga or going to the gym or whatever. It's like, I am not going to sit here like a lump feeling bad for myself. I'm going to go do something about this.
Yeah. Yeah, so. I find a lot of my problems are the result of not leaving the house. So I feel you there.
Yeah.
One of the issues that Bohica has with entering this number is that the number represents a secret item in the Cardassian order.
You and your damn requisition code. It's for classified biotechnology, Quark. Even the cursed number is classified.
Created by the Obsidian Order, which is an intelligence wing of Cardassia.
It's compared to the Romulan Tal Shiar in this episode. And
in a Tal Shiar doesn't have shit on us kind of way.
Right, yeah. Obsidian Order ain't nothing to fuck with.
Right.
They seem like some pretty scary dudes, and they wind up, you know, like I like the way they're introduced in this episode. They kind of get introduced as just like that's what this thing is, and then this thing becomes kind of a pivotal element of the episode.
Do you think Gul Madred was Obsidian Order?
I fail to see where this analysis is leading.
To have gotten away with doing that to a Starfleet flagship captain?
I don't know. Like, this is new continuity, right?
Yeah.
So I would say that you would be quite free to retcon him as being that.
Yeah, I wonder.
And the, like, level of of what they're capable of that is implied by this episode is pretty fun.
The Obsidian Order is just all about stripping their prisoners. They're very into humiliation.
Yeah. The dignity of everybody is entirely the choice of the Obsidian Order. Like, you'll get the amount of dignity that you deserve and no more.
A lot of Gull Lindy England types over there.
Yeah, it's just a few bad apples. It's not the Leggetts at the top. It's all these, like, kind of, there's some gulls in the system that were not properly trained, you know? This does not go up to the top at all. Nobody more powerful than a gull should get in trouble for what's going on in the Obsidian Order.
There's a description of the Obsidian Order that calls them the eyes and the ears. Like, there's an example used about them goes like, you can't eat your breakfast or take a shit without them knowing what you're eating or where you're shitting. Like, and that is an interesting counterpoint to Odo's affixing of a bunch of cameras around DS9, except the episode never connects those two.
Yeah, I thought that was weird too. Like he learned all his tricks from these guys, right?
I got that sense, but it is so downplayed. Like, their relationship, like, Odo's Spycraft's relationship to Obsidian Order is handled so separately in this episode that I don't believe that any comparison drawn between them is intended.
Yeah.
And I kind of wish that it was.
I'm with you, buddy.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail. A bucket. A pail. Mr. Bucket, I have to revert back to my living state.
Bashir heads back to the office and finds that Garrick has checked himself out of the hospital on his own recognizance.
Bashir allowed him to have clothes, unlike what he usually does to Dax.
Doctor, what a pleasant surprise.
And so he, like, goes to Garrick's quarters, and he has to, like, medical override the doors open because Garrick won't answer. And Garrick is in the midst of, like, hypo spraying shit into his neck when Bashir walks in.
How much of this did you take?
A mere 30 cc's. Not nearly enough, I'm afraid.
Yeah, he got caught with the works in his hand.
Yeah. Oh, there's your rig. It's it's out in the open now, Garrick.
This is one of the scenes where Andrew Robinson, as Garrick, just, like, boxes out the rest of the cast members and takes over the show.
Yeah.
He is really incredible here, and the production gives him the respect of giving him a couple of oners, like a couple of really nice runs of dialogue unbroken, yeah. And this is one of them when he tells this story.
They're not cutting around. They're letting the camera linger on him and letting him, like, go through the cycle,
yeah,
in a take, which is, you know, that's how you want to do it, right? Like, you want to. Like, it's such an interesting character because he's so big, you mm-hmm. know? Like, he's really big, and we've never seen him go through feelings like this before. Like, what he's going through in this episode is so personal and so, you know, he's in so much pain, so much obvious pain that...
But it's all kinds of pain, right? It's not just physical. He's being tormented by memories,
yeah,
and shame.
And, like, the motivation he has is that he does not want to be the subject of Bajoran Schadenfreude. Whatever his feelings about the occupation or, like, what he did in the occupation, which he lies about a whole bunch of times, the fact that he has to live here and be seen in public by the, you know, people under whose boot heel or who were under his boot heel for so long. Like, the idea of them getting to enjoy his suffering is impossible for him to bear. And that, like, kind of makes him seem more evil than he has seemed in the past, but also weirdly humanizes him.
Right.
Like, it kind of does both things at the same time, which is a real magic trick.
By humanizes him, could I use the word, like, sympathizes him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he really goes through a lot of stages here in this scene in a great way. He's totally riveting.
Yeah, he's really good. And he's also doing a little bit of do you know how I got these scars in this episode? Like, I almost wondered if Nolan based some of the Joker in the Batman movie off of this Garrick character trait.
Where oh, interesting.
He tells the same origin story over and over again, and it's different each time.
Huh.
Never start with the head. The victim gets all fuzzy.
I kind of doubt it because it's Heath Ledger and Christopher Nolan and, like, Hollywood. Like, serious Hollywood people.
You don't think serious Hollywood people are using DS9 as cues?
I mean, what should be taken very seriously is Andrew Robinson's performance, which is great. But no, I don't believe anyone is mining DS9 for character building material for for superhero films, unfortunately.
Oh well, Adam. Oh well.
What Garrick confides here is that he has an implant in his head that's primary use was to turn on in the event that he'd been tortured. And so it kind of like, if he were to be tortured, it would get him through that torture in such a way that it would almost be enjoyable. Like he would stand up to that sort of harsh questioning.
It stimulates his pleasure centers to the extent that if somebody asked him to say, how many lights do you see? He would say, there are 4 lights.
Right.
Not, lights!
Evidently, his experience on the station is such that it has felt like torture to the degree that he decided on a whim to just turn it on.
Yeah.
And
like he hates being here so much that he's essentially been dosing himself. Like, he's been gradually modulating up how much Prozac he's been taking.
It really unlocks something about Garrick over the last 2 seasons for me, which is like, yeah, he's totally been stoned for 2 seasons. Like, he's been on 20 milligram gummies throughout. And it totally, like, if you think back on all the fun Garrick moments with how chill he's been in just about every situation, like, of course, he's just trying to relax. And it's worked. But the problem is, the thing in his brain has run out of juice. And he's become dependent on those higher endorphin levels. And without them, he's going through a form of withdrawals.
Yeah, and so like Bashir convinces him at long length to tell him where the garage door opener is that turns on and off the chip in his head, and Bashir pulls it out and switches him off, and that precipitates Garrick needing to go through withdrawals.
Yeah, and in a scene that you get in a lot of films that feature drug withdrawals, you get a passing time montage where a caretaker is in tight quarters with someone who needs that kind of care.
Yeah, and you get the dissolve to like show him in different parts of the room, like making himself a cup of tea, et cetera, et cetera.
In Star Trek, you get the single brass instrument of passing time. Which you definitely get here.
Sure. I thought that it was interesting that Odo was like, cool, he's off the drugs. Let's talk to him about these murders. It sounds like he was in the Obsidian Order.
Yeah.
We can track some information down now.
Yeah, Odo, a person who asks permission from nobody, seems on some level to be interested in going by the book in this case.
Yeah, it's interesting that, like, I think that the politics of this could be tested. You know, Odo could try to go over Bashir's head here and see if Sisko would order him to do something.
Yeah.
But he doesn't.
It's clear by the end of the episode that I'm not sure that you would get anything if you were to interrogate Garrick.
Right.
You'd get 40 different versions of the answer to a question.
Yeah, and like one of the scenes during the detox is Garrick telling Bashir in a way that feels like really raw and honest, like, I hate your guts and I hate myself for looking forward to hanging out with you. And, you know, like telling all these stories that seem to be both plausible but also apocryphal about what has motivated him over the course of his life.
There is such an acute kind of pain that comes from a friend really giving you the business.
Yeah.
And like hitting all the buttons.
I know what all of your sensitivities are because how much time I've spent with you. And so now I'm going to stick knives in all of them.
Yeah, and that's what Garrick's doing to Bashir. To Bashir's credit, he sees this as a medical problem and not a friendship problem at this point.
Like, right, he lets it run off his back.
Yeah, which was a character-building moment for me. It made me like Bashir a lot here. He doesn't break, especially once he starts being thrown around the room.
Yeah, they do start...
They do start Star Trek fighting here.
There's a Star Trek tussle that only ends because Garrick is having a seizure or something, right?
The Bashir stunt double is not great in terms of how closely he looks like Siddig.
Yeah. Is it an I'm going to get you sucker level stunt double?
Yeah. I mean, it's very nicely edited, but it's super fun.
Good thing Garrick keeps his quarters so gloomy, right?
Right.
So Garrick is back to being unconscious in the infirmary. And, it feels like a more controlled environment than his own quarters.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're realizing that there's only so much they can do for him because his... Dr. Bashir's knowledge of Cardassian physiology is just so limited, and all of the stuff in the computer has been wiped. You know, like the Cardassians didn't leave their medical files before, you know, when they pulled out.
This is another example of wishing that the Bajoran people on the station had more to do in a story that is Cardassian-centric. Because right.
There's that Bajoran nurse, and she's very like professional, and like she's never got weird feelings about providing life-saving care.
That was exactly where I was going. Yeah, that's Nurse Jabara, played by Steve Sanders' mom. She's back. She's a character that's been on the show a couple of times before. But yeah, where's her mixed feelings? Where is Kira or even Sisko about this? Like, one or both or all of them should have something to say about this.
Yeah. And furthermore, who is Steve Sanders?
Steve Sanders from 90210, Ben. Ask your wife.
Don't tell me to ask my wife something, you creep.
Do you think it's weird that Bashir is given the latitude to do whatever he wants for Garrick's care without ever asking Sisko what he should be doing?
Yeah, it's...
Like, not that Bashir would need to ask permission, but, like, I feel like a couple of just run-it-by Siskos would be sort of the thing to do when you're dealing with a person all people involved know to be a spy.
Right. The national security implications of what Garrick is going through are non-trivial.
Exactly.
And Garrick is not exactly advocating for his own well-being, right? Like, they realize that they can turn the gizmo in his brain back on, buy him a week, and see if they can synthesize the leukocytes that they need to help him detox. The best part of getting
better is leukocyte AIDS recovery.
But Garrick is unwilling to entertain that as an option, which makes the urgency surrounding saving his life fairly high.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
In here, buddy.
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
There's something pretty powerful that happens here, which is that Garrick kind of turns this into deathbed confession mode.
Right. The story he's told about how he was busted down to tailor duty has changed throughout the episode. And right.
There was like wasting a ship full of civilians and his buddy Elim at some point. And this one, it's like, it's about how he heard that he was going to get betrayed and kicked out of the Obsidian Order by his brother Elim, or not his brother, but his like dear friend Elim, and worked very hard to have that happen to Elim instead of himself, but find out that it was already like too far gone by the time he did anything.
Yeah.
So he's got the guilt of betraying his dear friend, but also the knowledge that his dear friend betrayed him. He got the double whammy, as it were. And he like wants sympathy and forgiveness from Bashir, which is a very sympathetic moment for him. You know, like I'm here like thinking back on like the terrible things that I've tried to do and have done in my life. And I want to feel like they're not that bad. Like I'm not a terrible person.
Earlier in the episode, Garrick drops a name of the guy who actually gave him the implant. And that guy's Enebron Tain. And so Bashir, reaching basically the moment of desperation, decides to grab a runabout and go out to see this guy. Because in addition to the name drop, Garrick also states where he lives.
Peppers into the conversation enough information for Bashir to actually find the retired head of the Obsidian Order. And he runabouts out there and is like in the dude's living room when he walks in. Like, I guess that's how houses work in Cardassia.
Sure.
And Enebron Tain is a great character. He's like kind of a rotund dude, and he comes in, he knows all of Bashir's drink order specifics, and you know, he does a lot to telegraph that this is not a surprise to him, and that he knows more about Bashir than Bashir knows about himself, etc., etc.
It doesn't seem like you get too many stocky Cardassians, but they do get stockier the higher up they go in rank, I feel like.
Yeah.
It feels like gulls totally are very slender with long necks.
And like it's are comfortable, I feel like to say.
Yeah. And this guy having been retired and having had a career at the top of the Obsidian Order, he's soft. Good for him.
He's got this interesting combination of pragmatic and even keeled, but like super duper vindictive. Like he's very praiseworthy of how skilled Garrick was as an operative, but also is like, yeah, he needs to live so that he can be miserable for the rest of his long life. And that's a pretty evil 1-2 punch.
Well, it's not evil to hold a grudge.
Isn't it, Adam? Isn't it?
I'm saying that in my own defense, as someone who famously holds grudges.
Remind me never to get on the wrong side of Adam Pranica.
Oh, I guess I just have my first taste of the filthy side of this business.
One of the things that this guy gives Bashir is the knowledge that there is no Elim. Elim is Garrick's first name.
Yeah, and Bashir's been buds with Garrick for a long time and did not know that. So that's pretty fun.
What's great about Enebron's deal is like...
Are you saying Enebron like you say ankylosaur?
Yeah. I'm having a hard time with his name.
Enebron.
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 Yeah.
Enebron.
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 Ankylosaur.
What I like about Enebron's deal here is that like he's giving Bashir the life-extending information to patch Garrick up, but only because it will extend and torture Garrick for the rest of his life as he remains on DS9. Like it's a real yes, but situation.
This guy does not need to be caught up on any of the, you know, they don't have to show him the episode up till now.
Yeah.
The way Riker would have had to, he is well aware of everything that's going on and, wants to seal the deal that Garrick gets to live the rest of his life shittily.
He knows exactly what Bashir likes to drink. He has to know that they have weekly breakfasts every week for a year.
Yeah.
He's got to know that Garrick had turned on the device.
right?
He has to know all that shit.
I wonder if that device calls home when it gets turned on.
He's got to know about the voles, right?
Yeah, by the way, dude, what do you think? Glue traps, snap traps, is there something else?
Yeah, Bashir really should have used his time more efficiently here and gotten more info on the DS9.
Listen,
O'Brien is going to be super pissed at him.
What Bashir, if he had a little bit more guile, would have realized is that now he has some leverage. Anabrin Tain has revealed that he wants Garak to live long and suffer. And therefore, Bashir could be like, well, I don't have to save him. Like I could go back and this could be a total slip-up and he could die peacefully in his sleep. You don't want that, do you? Tell me about these voles. You know? That's what Bashir should have done. But instead, he just gets, you know, he gets the medical information transmitted to the station's computer and he heads back and he patches his little buddy Garak up. He's like, he's having lunch and Garak steps up to the table and they have a little perfunctory conversation about, like, you shouldn't be out of bed, buddy. And, no, I hate it in there. Ha 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 ha. They play a little game of, like, two truths and a lie. Bashir wants to know which of the stories Garak told him in this very trying episode were true. And Garak says that they were all true, even the lies. Especially the lies.
I have been complaining. I had complained a couple of times up until now about things that I wish had occurred in the episode that didn't.
Yeah.
But something does not occur here that I'm glad didn't occur, which is Garak apologizing for being such a dick to Bashir earlier. There's never that moment of, you know, I was really fucked up and going through withdrawals. Like, I'm sorry, said all that messed up, all those messed up things to you. There's right. never any of that. And part of it, I think, is that Bashir understands that he was going through withdrawals. I think the darker part of it is all of that was true and that Garak might actually feel that way and does not wish to apologize for saying any of it.
Well, I think that you can feel that way and also have it not mean as much as it sounds like it means, you know?
Yeah.
Like any close relationship I have, like, there's a lot I love about the person and things that I resent or dislike about the person. And I let the things that I love about the person take more weight, you know?
Right.
And sometimes you have those dark moments where you let all of the bad side come out and ignore the good side. And ideally you take ownership of that bad stuff, right?
Hmm.
Or not, you know.
No, I'm just thinking about it. Yeah. Weird.
Did you like the episode, Adam?
Yeah, I really did. I think this is one of my favorites of season two. I liked it quite a bit. And I wouldn't have expected to, given how absent the heavy hitters of season two have been. Barely a Columini.
Yeah.
Very little Jadzia Dax. Next to zero Nana Visitor and a single line out of Avery Brooks. Like, I would not have expected an episode free from all of those people to be as good as this was. But I think that just says a lot about how unappreciating I have been for Dr. Bashir and Garak up until now. I think giving them this bottle was a really good idea.
Yeah, this Bashir app before now has not necessarily boded well.
Agreed, yeah.
And this time it was a great ep. And, you know, Alexander Siddig is not, he's kind of the straight man in this episode,
mm-hmm.
but his performance is really good. I saw a lot of sides of his character that I've wanted to see before, you know, the caretaker, the concerned friend that, you know, have mm-hmm. been presented, like, I think previous episodes that centered around him have not necessarily reflected well on the character, and this generally really does.
Yeah.
I also, like, I thought it was shot interestingly. Like, there's some really great and interesting close-ups. There's some great wide shots. Like, I don't think that we've seen, like, full body shots of Alexander Siddig so far. And he's probably the only character that looks good in the Deep Space Nine version of the Starfleet uniform, because he's so lean. Like he kind of looks like Fred Astaire in his uniform.
And yeah, he's very lithe.
He's very like elegant in this episode. And
not for nothing, Ben, this is the first DS9 episode to be directed by a woman. It's Kim Friedman.
Really?
And they liked her work so much that they brought her back to do a bunch more episodes. Your instinct that something was different about this ep and its direction bared some truth.
How about that female gaze?
I think I was able to answer this with my answer to whether or not I like the episode, but do you think that in order to like the episode, you have to be okay with the questions about Garrick being unanswered or being ambiguous? Because I think a lot of people who wouldn't like this episode would probably dislike it because you go through all of this and you're back to one with Garrick. Like, like you go through a ton of shit and I don't think you're more knowledgeable for it in terms of Garrick's story. Where are you
vulnerable,
on that?
Vulnerable, but in a way that is kind of, you can't get back to that point.
Yeah. Yeah, it only makes him vulnerable. It does not disclose anything else.
Right.
Because you just don't know what to believe.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind that. I like that he's a chaos agent. And
yeah,
I like that there seem to be times when he can't be trusted and other times where he's instrumental to saving the day, you know?
Yeah.
That makes him such an interesting factor in the show.
Well, the chaos agent in every episode of The Greatest Generation is the priority one message. What do you say we see if we have any of those, Ben?
Let's do it.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, we have a couple of priority one messages here. The first one is of a promotional nature, and it's from our buddy Felipe Sobriero, whose name I am positive I'm saying wrong because he is from Brazil and I am always wrong when it comes to pronouncing something Portuguese. It goes like this. If you aren't as embarrassed as Ben and Adam to let people know you're into Star Trek, get your Three Worf Morn apparel right now. Designed by friend of DeSoto, Felipe Sobriero. Visit sobriero.threadless.com, and that's sobriero.threadless.com, and shop like a warrior. Kapla!
Shop like a warrior. That's great, Felipe. Jeez. What's great about his store is that you can put that Three Worf Morn design on like a pillow or a shower curtain or like there are various textiles that you can put this artwork on that I think is great.
Oh, amazing. I had no idea. That's
yeah, it's not just for shirts.
That's tremendous. We were kind of hoping for this to be an official Greatest Gen merch item, and a number of factors prevented that from happening, but we are really excited that Felipe is selling it nonetheless, because Three Worf, it's, you know, you've seen the Three Wolf Moon t-shirt. This is Three Worf Morin. So imagine three Worfs and a Morin.
You get it, right?
I really hope that he just rakes it in from the friends of DeSoto with this design, because it's really funny. And he's also the guy doing the design for our board game, which is getting improved very shortly.
Yeah, we're so lucky to have such talented friends.
Indeed, Adam. Do we have any more Priority One messages?
We do. We have a personal Priority One message. It is from Colonel Walter E. Kurtz. It is for John Roderick.
What?
Unfortunately for Colonel Kurtz, John Roderick doesn't listen to podcasts.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure.
Least of all, podcasts made by dear friends of his.
Right. Message goes like this. It's impossible for words to describe what is necessary to those who do not know what Star Trek means. Trek. Trek has a face, and you must make a friend of Trek. Trek and bad jokes are your friends. If they are not, then they are enemies to be feared. They are truly enemies. Drop the bomb. Exterminate all the Hoosnock.
Is that your best Kurtz impression Adam?
I don't have a Kurtz impression.
Trek and bad jokes are your friends. That's my Kurtz. That's my bad Kurtz.
Strong Kurtz.
Well, I don't know if we'll remember to tell John that happened or what it was by the time we do remember, but thank you, Colonel Walter Kurtz, for sending that in.
If you're interested in... let's really sell P1s this time, Ben. What do you think? How do we do it?
Let's sell the shit out of them, Adam.
Ben, Priority One messages are some of the best ways to support the ongoing production of our show. You've heard advertisements on our show from time to time. Those entities pay a lot more than what a Priority One message costs, that's for sure.
So if you've got like a project or a product that you would like to get into the minds of tens of thousands of friends of DeSoto, this is where you go. You go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. It's $100 for a personal message and $200 for a commercial message.
While we're at it, if you're interested in selling an advertisement, I think you'd be surprised at how obscene the number of listeners are that we have for this show. Get a hold of Kira at MaximumFun.org and she'll hook you up.
Kira will hook it up. And, you know, we've got repeat businesses from a lot of advertisers, so it seems to be working.
At least something does.
get that cold press latch. Get that
cold press latch.
Am I right? Yeah. Am I right?
Every morning when I hop out of bed, I get a couple of capsules of my Ritual multivitamin and a capsule of my Ritual Symbiotic Plus probiotic. I pop them in my mouth, wash them down with a bunch of water. And I know I've taken vitamins and supplements that are going to get my body off to a good start. And these are rigorously tested and validated by third parties for allergens, microbes, and heavy metals. And they use scientific tools to select lower carbon packaging, prioritize sustainably sourced ingredients, and set ambitious climate goals. The Essential for Men is the quality multivitamin that I take from a company you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/scars. Start Ritual or add Essential for Men to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/scars for 25% off.
I've got to fly cross country to visit our buddy Adam Ragusea today, and there have already been 2 flight delays on the outbound. And as I watch the delays get longer and my travel day get thrown into a shambles, I'm remaining chill. There's nothing I can do but wait, and I'm making my waiting a little better with a microdose gummy. That's because microdose gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help me feel just the right amount of good. We've all seen those videos of people going crazy on airplanes. Well, this isn't that kind of dose at all. This is the kind of dose that makes a long delay at an airport feel a little more bearable. There are all kinds of other uses, and if you've ever considered microdosing, I'd encourage you to give the products from Lumi Labs a try. Get 30% off your first order plus free shipping today at microdose.com using the promo code SCARVS. Now, these products are available nationwide, and that URL is microdose.com. The promo code is SCARVS. And with that, you can save 30% and free shipping. Again, that's microdose.com, and the promo code is SCARVS.
Hi, this is Biz, and this is the final season of One Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting. This is going to be a year of celebrating all that makes this podcast and this community magical.
I'm so glad that I found your podcast.
I just cannot thank you enough for just being the voice of reason as I'm trying to figure all of this out.
Thank you, and cheers to your incredible show and the vision you had to provide this space for all of us.
This is still a show about life after giving life. And yes, there will be swears. You can find us on MaximumFun.org. And as always, you are doing a great job.
All right, class. Tomorrow's exam will cover the science of cosmic rays, the morals of art forgery, and whether or not fish can drown. Any questions? Yes, you in the back. What is this?
It's the podcast Let's Learn Everything,
where we learn about science and a bit of everything else. My name's Tom. I study cognitive and computer science, but I'll also be your teacher for intermediate emojis.
My name's Caroline, and I did my master's in biodiversity conservation, and I'll be teaching you intro to things the British Museum stole.
My name's Ella. I did a PhD in stem cell biology, so obviously I'll be teaching you the history of fan fiction.
Class meets every other Thursday on Maximum Fun.
So do I still get credit for this?
No.
Obviously not.
No.
It's a podcast. Gotta get that gold press lack. Get that gold press lack. No,
platinum. Gold press lack. That's a lot of yamak sauce. Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
I think you had the term just a moment ago. The Shimoda of the episode is the Chaos Agent most of the time, and Garrick's the Chaos Agent of DS9. I think he's given the most to do here.
He gets the drunkest in this episode.
He gets the literal drunkest. In a very, I love the way he plays that scene. Like, he's not.
I like that Anabrin Tain is also drinking the same
thing
as him later in the episode.
I like that too. Yeah, the barbicide.
Yeah.
He's really great in this ep at all times. He plays drunk, he plays serious, he plays coy, he plays all of it. He plays hurt. He just does a lot of heavy lifting in this ep, so it's got to be Garrick for me. What about you, Ben?
My drunk Shimoda in this episode is, I guess it's Quark. It's the scene where Bashir is walking around after hours, like the bar is shutting down, and they show a shot of one of the bartender, you know, the Ferengi bar staff lowering the security shutters on the bar, and they appear to just be like loose hanging kind of accordion folded sheets. They're not like the security shutters on a real store where the, you know, it's like metal slats that are actually in a track so that you couldn't ever pull them out. It's just kind of like a Roman blind that he's pulling down. And I just thought that was a real asshole move on Quark's part to have that shitty of security given all the dirt he wants to be doing after hours.
Well, I mean, given the number of security cameras up around the station, maybe he's thinking that he'll, like, camera coverage will be the deterrent and not shutter.
And yet, there's a camera in the middle of his dining room that he's totally unaware of.
Yeah. He's got a real blind spot. His peripheral vision has got to be fucked with those ears, right?
I guess so. Would you see them? I don't know if you would see them.
I mean, put your fingers on your ears and then draw them out 5 inches. I can see both of my fingers. Can you?
Yeah, I guess it would fuck your peripheral vision up.
It totally would.
Whoa.
Totally.
Shit, dog.
If we ever get to interview Armin Shimmerman, I'm going to be sure to ask how his peripheral vision was obscured by those ears.
Don't make promises you can't keep, Adam.
What do we have coming up on the next episode, Ben?
The next episode is season 2, episode 23, Crossover, a mishap in the wormhole sends Kira and Bashir into an alternate universe where Bajor is a tyrannical power and humans are slaves?
Is this a Mirror Universe episode?
I'm thinking it might be. It kind of reads like Mirror Universe, right?
Huh.
If this is, this might be the one where Odo gets shot and, like, turns into Oobleck.
Oh.
Which is a really awesome effect that I remember quite vividly from watching this show the first time.
Hmm.
Netflix, of course, has it as, after experiencing operational difficulties while traveling through the wormhole, Kira and Bashir find themselves in an alternate universe. Which kind of makes me think you're right.
Interesting. Wow. Well, I'm psyched to get myself back over to the Mirror Universe. Be fun to see what the differences are.
Yeah, I mean, like, this was, I think Mirror Universe, as of when this actually aired, Mirror Universe hadn't been heard from since TOS. They didn't mess around with that shit in TNG.
Deep Space Nine did a deep dive into the Mirror Universe with 5 separate episodes across 5 different seasons. Crossover in Season 2, Through the Looking Glass in Season 3, Shattered Mirror in Season 4, Resurrection in Season 6, and The Emperor's New Cloak in Season 7. Wow, they did it kind of a lot.
Yeah.
Cool,
it's kind of a main thing in Deep Space Nine.
That checks out. Fun.
Adam, do you want to see if we're going to be doing it in any particular type of way?
Yeah, I think we have to, Ben. We are currently on square 71, which is just on the porch of a Quark's bar on square 72.
Has it been long enough since our last Quark's bar episode to be on the porch again? Aren't there rules?
Hardly.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
All right, well, I'm going to roll. Oh, I rolled a one.
There you go. Yeah, that's what we deserve.
Drink is the antidote.
That's what you get for talking shit, Ben.
That is what I deserve. I don't really believe in luck or foreordination or anything, but that's kind of creepy.
Yeah, well, that's us.
That being the case, I guess next week we will be rage drunks because it's the mirror universe. I don't know. How does it work?
Maybe we are we're stone cold sober and we're just drinking virgin daiquiris.
Yeah. All the calories, none of the alcohol.
None of the fun.
Well, that'll be the next episode. In the meantime, we'd really appreciate it if you went over to Apple Podcasts, left a nice review, went to greatestgencon, khan.com, and got yourself tickets to one of our many live shows that are coming up. Those are going to be great, and we are really looking forward to them. In a scant couple of weeks, we are going to be in Las Vegas, which which is counter-programmed against the Las Vegas Star Trek convention, which I'm sure a lot of you are going to. And, you know, if you want to go do something a little bit punk rock, a little bit slam dance in the shadow of the
you don't know anything
pocket.
About punk rock, do you?
You don't think slam dance is punk rock?
Yeah, slam dance is punk rock. That's not the reference that I would have reached for.
I was making a second analogy, not continuing with the same one.
I'm psyched for this Vegas show, Ben.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And, you know, we're gonna see the con a little bit ourselves, which I'm also excited about. I've never been to a Star Trek convention, so it'll be a real experience for me.
You'll be cosplaying as Benjamin R. Harrison from The Greatest Generation.
I'll be cosplaying as that guy that went to summer camp that time and introduced himself to people as Wesley.
Yeah. Think you can pull that off?
So, you know, come to that show or come to one of the, I think, 18 or 19 other shows that we have announced. It's greatestgencon.com, and con is spelled K-H-A-N because it's not a convention. It's a live show about Star Trek Wrath of Khan. Get it?
Yeah, that would be really confusing if you dropped in on one of our shows expecting it to be a convention-like atmosphere. It's a show, and it's great.
Show. It's a really fun show. It's got a couple of jokes in it that I am tremendously proud of, and dozens of jokes in it that I'm pretty ashamed of. So
that's our brand.
Let that inform your purchasing decision.
Way to stir up our viewers into a lather. A lather of ticket buying power.
A number of jokes that if I had to explain them at a dinner party with a bunch of my wife's friends, I would be pretty embarrassed about the whole thing. You can also support the show by going to MaximumFun.org/donate and making a monthly contribution to support the production of this program. We can't do it without y'all.
Yeah, 220 episodes in the can up until now.
Yeah.
If you've enjoyed our work up until now, and if that has a value to you, I would encourage you to help with the ongoing production of the show, because we hope to do hundreds and hundreds more from here.
Go to that and help make them be free and stay free forever. We should thank Dark Materia for our original theme music and the great Adam Ragusea, who has made so much great music for the program.
And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which leaves me so little time to grow a goatee. Captain,
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.